Marvin?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Cody Marvin on behalf of Carol Bates. This is a Social Security disability case where the ALJ's decision contains several errors which require reversal of the ALJ's decision. The ALJ did not properly evaluate plaintiff's mental impairments in this case. The ALJ rejected the opinion of plaintiff's treating doctor, treating psychiatrist, which was the only mental health opinion in the record. When she did that, she substituted her own lay opinion for the treating source's opinion and came to her own conclusions in the residual functional capacity assessment.
But you're focusing on the mental condition, not the physical.
Well, it's a combination of both, and starting with the mental. This case was a little bit unusual. Usually what happens when a person files for benefits, if they have both physical and mental impairments, they will put that in the initial application, and Social Security, over the course of the application, will have them evaluated by both physical and mental health doctors. In this case, the mental health impairments didn't turn up until later. She filed the application in 2007 and didn't have her hearing until 2010. In the meantime, she was diagnosed with major depressive disorder and then bipolar disorder. These all came up after the state agency reviewed her file, so there was never a state agency review. There was never a consultative examination of her mental health impairments. So by the time she got to the hearing, she submitted her treatment records from both her therapist and her psychiatrist, and an opinion from her psychiatrist, which effectively said that she wouldn't be capable of sustaining full-time work due to problems with concentration and just keeping up a full-time work schedule. The ALJ gave two reasons for rejecting this opinion, but neither of them was sufficient. The first was that the doctor, Dr. Shahzad, said that she had fair capacity in many areas. In the form that Dr. Shahzad filled out, he went over several different work-related functions and said that she had fair ability in many areas, meaning that the activities weren't totally precluded, but she had significant limitations. Dr. Shahzad also opined that she had poor to no ability in two areas, basically sustaining concentration and pace and keeping up a full-time work schedule. The ALJ doesn't specifically address the areas where she had poor to no ability. The ALJ just seems to say, though she doesn't say it too specifically, that because there were more fair ratings than poor to no areas on the whole, she was capable of sustaining unskilled work. The ALJ also rejected the opinion, saying that the doctor had only treated Ms. Bates for 3 months at the time she gave the opinion. Problem with that is, like I said before, this was the only mental health opinion in the record. Dr. Shahzad.
There was a later report from Shahzad, wasn't there?
There were other treatment records, but there was only the one opinion.
None of the other records deal with her mental problems? None of Shahzad's other reports deal with her
mental problems? The other reports are all they're all ongoing treatment notes, but they aren't the medical source statement.
Yes, I know, but they are evidence, aren't they?
Yes, right. So the only evidence we have...
That you just saw him for 3 months. So after three months, he issues this report, but then there's other evidence of his treatment of her.
Right.
Does that evidence corroborate his report or contradict it?
Yes, it generally corroborates it. After the 3 months, Dr. Shahzad continued to see Ms. Bates for, I believe, 3 more months. The records from after that, I believe Dr. Shahzad gave the opinion in September of 2009, and records from October of 2009 say that she's still having problems. And
does she get any treatment for depression?
Yes, she's seeing both a therapist as well as a psychiatrist, Dr. Shahzad.
Does she take pills?
Yeah, she's taking Prozac. She's taking Prozac, and she's getting talk therapy more frequently than she's seeing the psychiatrist. And those records all mention that her affect is flat, her mood is depressed.
I think the government said that when she was diagnosed with depression, it was shortly after her mother had died, and then a few months later she said she was feeling better.
Well, she was actually diagnosed with it before her mother died. I think the first mention of a mental problem is actually in 2008. It says, let me see, where was that? In May of 2008, at record page 446, she was diagnosed with an adjustment disorder with depressed mood. And the note says that because of injuries she had before and some other problems, she was having difficulty adjusting to that. However, when she saw Dr. Shahzad for the first time in June of 2009, she was diagnosed with depressive disorder, and this was before her mother died. Her mother died after she initially went in and sought treatment. Now, the commissioner does argue that her condition improved and that the ALJ's functional capacity assessment is based on this improvement. There are two notes, essentially, that the commissioner relies upon, and these are both from December of 2009, and they are the last notes that we have in the record. One is from the therapist, one from the psychiatrist. Now, all throughout the record before that, her affect is flat, she's got depressed mood, she's having problems with impulse control and concentration, and the records reflect all of this. On December 3rd of 2009, it did say she was feeling better and she was more in control of her anger. Then on December 17th of 2009, she was feeling less irritable and agitated, having fewer mood swings. Her insight and judgment and impulse control were still rated as fair. So if there was any improvement at all, we don't know how long it lasted for, and she's still clearly having symptoms that she was having before. So the problem here is that the ALJ rejects this very specific opinion from the treating source and then comes up with her own residual functional capacity assessment, but the treatment notes don't support the specific findings. The ALJ basically just limits her to unskilled work, but doesn't take into account the particular problems that Ms. Bates has. The ALJ's decision with regard to the mental impairments is also internally inconsistent, because at step three of the decision, the ALJ says that Ms. Bates has moderate difficulties in social functioning because of difficulty getting along with people, and that she has moderate difficulties in concentration, persistence, or pace. But in the residual functional capacity assessment, the ALJ specifically says the claimant can interact appropriately with others. Doesn't put any limitations in there, despite evidence of problems getting along with people, frustration, anger, that sort of thing. Also says the claimant can concentrate, persist, and work on a sustained basis. So again, despite the ALJ finding moderate impairment earlier, puts no impairment and no limitations related to this in the residual functional capacity assessment. The ALJ also incorrectly rejected the opinion of Dr. Cordero, Ms. Bates' physician. Dr. Cordero said that Ms. Bates had limits in standing, walking, sitting, concentrating, all based on arthritis in the cervical and lumbar spines, as well as chronic pain disorder. The ALJ rejects this opinion. In one sentence, just says, generally, examination showed normal strength, normal ambulation, and no muscle spasm. Now, part of the problem here is
that... Where did that come from? Those last three statements.
Oh, sorry. This is the ALJ's decision.
It's the ALJ, not the...
Right. The ALJ's decision. She says that in one sentence and then rejects the whole thing.
Did you rely on something in the record for that?
The ALJ, well, she didn't rely on anything specific in terms of the rejection of the opinion. As far as the residual functional capacity assessment, she relied on a state agency doctor who had never...
No, I meant what you just said, what Judge Kenney was asking.
Well, the ALJ doesn't cite anything in the record.
She doesn't, yeah.
It's her interpretation of the evidence submitted with regard to...
Right, and it's just a general statement. But the problem with the ALJ's decision here is she doesn't go through Dr. Cordero's treatment notes, which show consistent complaints of pain.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to compare
right.
What his comments are.
The notes over time show consistent complaints of pain and abnormal musculoskeletal examinations. Another problem with this is that the ALJ didn't consider the length of treatment, because at the time Dr. Cordero gave the opinion, she'd been treating Ms. Bates for at least a year. And the ruling, or the regulation, 416.927, says that treating sources may have insight into a person's condition that don't appear in any objective tests or examinations. A lot of this had to do with pain, and Dr. Cordero is in the best position to evaluate this pain and explain what limitations arose. I see I'm about out of time, so we'll save the rest.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Barnett. Mr. Garrett?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is James Garn, and I represent the Commissioner in this matter. As Mr. Marvin said, there are two principal pieces of evidence that are at issue in this case. And the first one is the opinion of Dr. Shahzad, who set forth fairly extreme limitations in the form that he completed in November 2009. It's our position that that form represented Ms. Bates' condition reasonably well at that time. If you look at the actual evidence, she was at a very serious point in the course of her depression. Dr. Shahzad prescribed medications. Some of the medications were not working. In November 2009, when he completed this form, she was having a bad reaction to a medication he'd prescribed. He altered the medication, and the evidence indicates that after that, her condition improved, so that by early December, she wasn't without symptoms, but her condition was improved.
Well, how much improved?
Well, the therapist said that she was better. She still had some problems. And then in late December, she denied having any depression at all. Her condition, again, the ALJ found that she had a severe mental
impairment. Why didn't the administrative law judge? Why didn't she appoint a doctor to examine her?
I do not know, Your Honor.
Well, isn't that the logical thing to do? She's better. Okay, how much better? What's her current condition?
I think that probably would be a logical thing to do. I believe that the ALJ here looked at the evidence that was before her and concluded that she was able to make that conclusion.
A word like better, that she's normal.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I don't know. Do people who have severe depression recover?
I've
heard of that.
I believe that medications are very effective with many of these conditions.
Well,
you know, this is 3 years ago. What's the current situation? It's hard to, you know, we're going back. I think the ALJ's decision was, what, 2010?
Yes, Your Honor, I have no evidence. As we pointed out in our brief, the ALJ issued his decision in May 2010. Dr. Shahzad issued his opinion in November 2009, and then we had the much more positive report in December 2009. There's no evidence that she received any treatment after that.
Well, that's a curious thing, because that's pretty substantial, because we look at our record and we see 3 years later nothing new, and that's all I'm wondering, because it's all based on her improvement over that period of time, relatively short period of time, which is okay if that's the fact. And I have the problem with we don't know what went on in the last 3 years. There was no request for a bracketed period of disability, right?
No, that's true, Your Honor. In fact, if you look at the evidence, it appears that the severe depression lasted approximately 5 or 6 months. She was first diagnosed in June 2009. Her condition was very poor at that time. She had a GAF score of 42, which indicates severe, very serious symptoms. In November 2009, she was given a GAF of 50, which is a little better. So we see a trend of improvement, but we don't have, particularly in December, we don't have any evidence after December. Again, I think that the reasonable inference is that there isn't evidence.
I do not understand. It would be the simplest thing in the world for the ALJ to appoint her, to ask ask that she be examined by a psychiatrist. Let me ask you another thing. My confidence in vocational experts was shaken by your representation on page 13 of your brief, that what he said, the individual, this is, of course, the plaintiff, could perform light work, except that she could only occasionally climb ladders, ropes, or scaffolds. Now, do you really think she could occasionally climb a rope? Could you climb a rope?
I believe, Your Honor, that the ALJ was basing that on the opinion of the state agency reviewing physician.
Well,
who
what kind of nonsense is that?
Well,
how can someone say that? What that suggests to me is mindless repetition of jargon and bureaucratic language. Occasionally climb ropes. It'd be embarrassment.
I understand your point, Judge Posner. I would assume that, however, the actual jobs that the vocational expert identified would not require the climbing of ropes or those other activities.
I don't think very many people would have to do that.
Maybe she's a sailor. When was the date of the hearing on this matter?
Hearing was April 6, 2010. It was about...
So it's over 3 years ago now since the hearing.
Yes, that's correct. It was about 1 month before the ALJ issued her decision.
Another thing that struck me about it is, and we've discussed this in previous periods, it's the weight that the ALJs often ascribe to people's personal household activities. For example, she dressed herself. Well, what's she supposed to do? Do you think that people who are severely depressed cannot even dress themselves? So that if they dress themselves, it shows that they're not severely depressed?
I don't think that was the inference that the ALJ was...
Why did she say that? You repeat it in your brief.
She prepared
meals, bathed, and dressed herself. She didn't prepare meals. She starves, right?
I think it's simply an attempt...
The notion that what one does in one's home is comparable to what one have to do in an eight-hour day at a job. If you're at home... You know, you have your own schedule. You can, if you don't feel well, you can wait to get dressed or wait to have lunch or something like that. And if in a job, you just have to be doing exactly what your employer tells you, 8 hours. That's far more taxing than what you do at home, especially since you have to, right? You have to eat. As I say, people with severe problems still do not starve to death because they are able to feed themselves.
That's a point well taken, Judge.
What probative value does this personal activities? Now, if she were climbing ropes in her living room, I would agree. That would be powerful evidence for you. But if all she's doing is preparing her meals, bathing, and dressing, I cannot see how that bears on her physical and mental conditions.
Your Honor, I think that the ALJ and other ALJs in the decisions that I've seen was not equating certain activities of daily living with an ability to work. That was simply one factor she was considering in evaluating the credibility.
Why it's one factor or one tenth of a set factor. Because they say severely depressed people get dressed, they feed themselves, but you take a severely depressed person and put her or him or her in a work situation, that person may be totally unable to function. That's the problem.
Well, that's true, Your Honor. Again, I don't think that this was equating those abilities.
Why mention it then?
I believe it's just simply an attempt to accurately summarize the evidence. A doctor commented on these facts. She, in a form that she completed for the state agency with her initial application, she would have completed a daily activities form, and so
it's on the form then.
Yes.
There's also another factor that is perplexing, and that is, I believe she has six children, right?
Yes, I think that's correct.
And the oldest at the time was 18, and seemed to be a substantial part of the cooking, taking care of the younger children, helping them with their homework, and that sort of thing.
That's so correct. That's what she testified.
That seems to be a great benefit and also a pretty big burden. I'm trying to reflect on that as a person with this capacity is having that kind of responsibility. Apparently, that wasn't a problem based on perhaps the older children being able to do a substantial part of what it would take to run the home. Maybe that's helped her a lot. Maybe that hasn't. The only problem I have with this is just 3 years ago, and presumably she's a lot better than she was, but we don't know that.
That's true, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Guerin.
Thank you,
Mr. Marvin. How much time does he have? 1 minute. Okay.
Okay, thank you. I just want to say, this was 3 years ago, but I don't think it's fair to assume that her condition has improved. Part of the thing that's difficult about getting these records together before hearings is trying to get all the medical records and opinions from doctors before you go to hearing, and it can be hard getting all this stuff from doctors. So you can see in the record that these records were requested in January of 2010. So the most recent record at that time was from December 17th of 2009. Once those records were submitted, she submitted all the treatment records and the opinion, and I don't know what more she could have done before the time of the hearing to get more records or submit more records. The problem here is that the ALJ, if she thought that wasn't enough time to show what the condition was over time, she should have ordered a consultative examination from a doctor with the agency or recontacted the treating source and asked, has this person gotten better? But the ALJ didn't do any of those things.
What did I don't know whether you or your firm or whatever, as far as follow-up on this sort of thing, there are certain things that sometimes people need to reapply. They've got a new situation or, situation's 3 years old. Maybe things are better. Maybe they're different. Maybe her whole family situation is different.
Okay, that may be true, but the problem here was that the ALJ made this error. I mean, she, to say that she should give up all of the benefits, which she may have been entitled to, I don't think that's right. I think the ALJ had a duty to, if she didn't believe what the doctor was saying or thought that the person's condition improved, had to get more evidence or maybe ask the attorney to get more evidence even, and say, tell me what this person's condition is now, because I can't tell from this amount of time.
Well, you're asked for a remand to do what?
For a remand so that we can supplement the record with updated mental health records, but also the ALJ's decision is full of errors with regard to the physical and the mental residual functional capacity. I think even with the evidence that's in the file, the ALJ didn't analyze it properly, and if it goes back again with a proper analysis, that this could reach a different conclusion.
For rehearing.
So it's not, yes, it's not solely just because there's evidence missing or something. It's that what was there supported her claim, and the ALJ didn't evaluate it properly.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Marvin and Mr. Guerin.
Thank you.
And our last case for argument, United States versus Ms. Slevik.